Chapter 10. It was full night above the common. The air was black crystal, clear and cold. The winds were bad. Dirk was grateful for the heavily armored Braith air car with its warm cabin fully enclosed. He kept them about 100 meters above the plains and the gentle hills and pushed the car as fast as he was able. Once, before Challenge had vanished behind them, Dirk looked back to see if there were any signs of pursuit. He saw none, but the Amorelli city caught and held his eye. A tall black spear, soon to be lost against the blacker sky. It reminded him somehow of the great tree that had been caught in a forest fire, its branches and its leaves all gone, nothing left but a charred and soot-dark stick to echo its former glory. He remembered Challenge as Gwen had first shown it to him, when he had asked to see a city with life. Bright against the evening, impossibly tall and shining silver, crowned by its ascending bursts of light. A dead husk now, and dead too the dreams of its builders. The hunters of Braith killed more than men and animals. "They will be after us soon enough, Telerion," Jan Vickery said. "You need not search for them." Dirk turned his attention back to his instruments. "Where are we going? We can't just fly blind above the common all night, heading for nowhere in particular. Lartain?" "We dare not go to Lartain now," Vickery replied. He had holstered his laser, but his face was as grim as it had been in Challenge when he burned down Myrick. "Are you so much the fool that you do not realize what I did? I broke the code, Telerion. I am an outbonder now, a criminal, a duel breaker. They will come after me and kill me as easily as they would a mockman." He knotted his hands together thoughtfully beneath his chin. "Our best hope? I do not know. Perhaps we have no hope." "Speak for yourself. I have quite a bit more hope right now than I did a minute ago, back there." Vickery looked at him and smiled despite himself. "In truth, though that is a most selfish viewpoint, it was not for you that I did what I did. For Gwen?" Vickery nodded. He did not even do her the honor of refusing, as if she were an animal. And yet by the code he was correct. The code I have lived by. I could have killed him for it. Garce intended to, as you witness. He was angry because Myrick had damaged his property, had darkened his honor. He would have avenged the slight had I let him. He sighed. "Do you understand why I could not, Telerion? Do you? I have lived on Avalon, and I have loved Gwen Delvano. She lay there, alive only by a quirk of fortune. Myrick Braith would not have cared had she died, nor would the others. Yet Garce would have granted the man who did this thing a clean and decent dying, would have given him the kiss of shared honor before taking his small life. I care for Garce. And yet I could not let it be, Telerion. Not when Gwen lay so still and so disregarded. I could not let it be." Vickery fell silent, brooding. Outside, in the moment of quiet, Dirk could hear the high keening of Warlorn's wind. "Jan," Dirk said after a while, "we still need to decide where we're going. We've got to get Gwen to shelter, some place we can make her comfortable, where she won't be bothered, maybe get a doctor to look at her." "I know of no doctors on Warlorn," Vickery said. "Still, we must bring Gwen to a city." He considered the question. "Esvok is the closest, but the city is a ruin. Crine Lamia is then our best choice, I think, since it lies second nearest to Challenge. Turn south." Dirk swung the air car about in a wide arc, sliding upward and heading for the distant line of the mountain wall. He vaguely remembered the course Gwen had flown from the shining tower of I Amaral to the Dark Dawn wilderness city and its bleak music. As they flew on toward the mountains, Vickery fell to brooding again, staring out blind into the blackness of Warlorn's night. Dirk, who had more than a hint of what the Cavalar was suffering, did not attempt to break his melancholy, but withdrew into his own sphere of thought and silence. He felt very weak. The ache in his head had returned to pound at him, and he was suddenly conscious of a parched rawness in his mouth and throat. He tried to recall when last he had taken food or water, and failed. somehow he had lost all track of time. The great coal peaks of Warlorn loomed up near at hand, and Dirk took the Braithair car higher to fly over them, and still neither he nor Jan Vickeries said a word. It was not until the mountains were behind them and the wilderness below that the Cavalar spoke again, and then it was only to give Dirk terse directions on the proper course to fly. Afterwards he lapsed back into silence, and it was in silence that they flew the lonely kilometers to their destination. This time Dirk knew what to expect, and he listened. The music of Lamia Baelis came to his ears, a faint wailing on the wind, long before the city itself rose up out of the forests to engulf them. Outside their armored haven was nothing but the void, the tangled forests of the night below them, the thin, starred and empty sky above. Yet the notes of dark despair came talking, tinkling, and they touched him where he sat. Vickery heard the music too. He glanced at Dirk. "This is a fitting city for us now, Telerion." "No," Dirk said, too loudly, not wanting to believe it. "For me, then, all my effort has gone to ashes. The folk I thought to save are saved no longer. The Braiths can hunt them at will now, Carariel of Iron Jade or no. I cannot stop them. Garse may, perhaps, but what can one man do alone? He may not even try. It was my obsession, never his. Garse is lost, too. He will go back to High Cavalan alone, I think, and descend alone to the holdfasts of Iron Jade, and the Highbond Council will take away my names, and he must find a knife and cut the glowstones from their settings and wear empty iron about his arm. His Tain is dead." "On High Cavalan, perhaps," Dirk said. "But you lived on Avalon too, remember?"
"Yes," said Vickery. "Sadly, sadly."
The music swelled and boomed around them, and the siren city itself took shape below. The outer ring of towers like fleshless hands in frozen agony, the pale bridges spanning dark canals, the swards of dimly shining moss, the whistling spires stabbing up into the wind. A white city, a dead city, a forest of sharpened bones. Dirk circled until he found the same building that Gwen had taken them to, and came in for a landing. In the air lot, the two derelict cars were still resting undisturbed, deep in dust. They seemed to Dirk like fragments of some other long-forgotten dream. Once, for some reason, they had seemed important, but he and Gwen and the world had all been different then, and now it was difficult to recall what possible relevance these metallic ghosts had had.
"You have been here before," Vickery said, and Dirk looked at him and nodded. "Lead then," the Cavalar ordered.
"I don't," but Vickery was already up. He had taken Gwen gently from where she lay and lifted her in his arms, and he stood waiting. "Lead," he said again. So Dirk led him away from the airlot, into the halls where the grey-white murals danced the Dark Dawn symphony, and they tried door after door until they found one room still furnished. It was a suite, actually, of four connecting rooms, all barren and high-ceilinged and far from clean. The beds, two of the rooms were bedrooms, were circular holes sunk deep into the floor. The mattresses were covered with a seamless, oily leather that gave off a faintly unpleasant odor, like sour milk. But they were beds, soft enough and a place to rest, and Vickery arranged Gwen's limp form carefully. When she was resting easily, she looked almost serene. Jan left Dirk sitting by her side, his legs folded under him on the floor, and went out to search the air car they had stolen. He returned shortly with a covering for Gwen and a canteen. "Drink only a swallow," he said, giving the water to Dirk. Dirk took the cloth-covered metal, twisted off the top, and took a single short pull before handing it back. The liquid was lukewarm and vaguely bitter, but it felt very good trickling down his dry throat. Vickery wet a strip of grey cloth and began to clean the dry blood from the back of Gwen's head. He dabbed gently at the brownish crust, wetting his rag again and yet again, working until her fine black hair was clean again and lay in a lustrous fan on the mattress, gleaming in the fitful light of the murals. When he was finished, he bandaged her and looked at Dirk.
"I will watch," he said. Go to the other room and sleep.
We should talk, Dirk said, hesitant.
Later, then. Not now. Go and sleep.
Dirk could hardly argue. His body was weary, and his own head was still throbbing. He went to the other room and fell gracelessly onto the sour-smelling mattress. But, despite his pain, sleep did not come easily. Perhaps it was the uneasy motion of the light that ran within the walls, which haunted him even through closed eyelids. Chiefly, though, it was the music, which did not leave him, and seemed to echo louder when he closed his eyes, as if that act had trapped it within his skull. Thin pipings and wails and whistles, and still, forever, the booming of a solitary drum. Fever dreams stalked that endless night, visions intense and surreal and hot with anxiety. 3 times Dirk was shaken from an uneasy sleep, to sit up, trembling, his flesh clammy, his face the song of Lamia Baylis once again, never quite remembering what had stirred him. Once on waking he thought he heard voices in the next room. Another time he was quite certain that he saw Jan Vickery sitting up against a far wall watching him. Neither of them spoke, and it took Dirk almost an hour to fall back into sleep, only to waken yet again to an empty, echoing room and moving lights. He wondered briefly if they had left him here alone to live or die. The more he thought on it, the more the fear grew and the worse his trembling became. But somehow he was unable to rise, to walk to the adjoining bedroom and see for himself. Instead, he closed his eyes and tried to force all memory away. And then it was dawn. Fat Satan was halfway up the sky, and feverish light, as red and cold as Dirk's nightmares, was flooding through a tall stained-glass window, predominantly clear in its center but bordered all around with an intricate pattern of somber red-brown and smoky gray to fall across his face. He rolled away from it and struggled to sit up, and Jan Vickery appeared, offering the canteen. Dirk took several long swallows, almost choking on the cold water and letting some of it splash over his dry, chapped lips and trickle down his chin. The canteen had been full when Jan handed it to him. He gave it back half empty. "You found water," he said. Vickery sealed up the canteen again and nodded. "The pumping stations have been closed for years, so there is no fresh water in the towers of Crine Lamia. Yet the canals still run. I went down last night while you and Gwen were sleeping." Dirk rose to his feet unsteadily. Vickery lent a hand to help him out of the sunken bed. "Is Gwen?" "She regained consciousness early in the night, Telerion. We spoke together, and I told her what I had done. I think she will recover soon enough. Can I talk to her?" "She is resting now, sleeping normally. Later, I am sure she will want to speak to you, but at the moment I do not think you should wake her. She tried to sit up last night and grew very unsteady and finally nauseous." Dirk nodded. "I see. What about you? Get any sleep?" As he spoke, he looked around their quarters. The Dark Dawn music had shrunken somehow. It still sounded, still wailed and moaned and permeated the very air of Crine Lamia, but to his ears it seemed fainter and more distant, so perhaps he was finally getting used to it, learning to tune it out of his conscious hearing. The light murals, like the glowstones of Lartain, had faded and died at the touch of normal sunlight. The walls were grey and empty. What furnishings there were, a few uncomfortable-looking chairs, flowed from the walls and floor, twisting extrusions that matched the color and tone of the chamber so well that they were almost invisible. "I have slept enough," Vickery was saying. "That is not important. I have been considering our position." He gestured. "Come." They walked through another chamber, an empty dining room, and out onto one of the many balconies that overlooked the Dark Dawn city. By day, Crine Lamia was different, less despairing. Even Warlorn's wan sunlight was enough to put a sparkle on the swift, flowing waters of the canals. And in the day-long twilight, the pale towers were less sepulchral. Dirk was weak and very hungry, but his headache had gone and the brisk wind felt good against his face. He brushed his hair, knotted and hopelessly filthy, back from his eyes and waited for Jan to begin. "I watched from here during the night," Vickery said, with his elbows on the cold railings and his eyes searching the horizon.
They are searching for us, Talarian. Twice I glimpsed air cars above the city. The first time it was only a light high in the distance, so perhaps I was wrong. Yet the second could be no mistake. The wolf-head car of Chell's flying near to ground level over the canals, with a searchlight of some sort attached, and passed quite close. There was a hound also. I heard it howling, all wild at the darkling music. They didn't find us, Dirk said. In truth, Vickery replied. I think we are safe enough here for a while. Unless, I am not sure how they found you in Challenge, and that gives me a fear. If they track us to Crine Lamia and comb the city with Braith hounds, our danger will be severe. We have no null scent now. He looked at Dirk. How did they know where you had fled? Do you have any ideas? No, said Dirk. No one knew. Certainly no one followed. Maybe they just guessed. It was the most logical choice, after all. Living was more comfortable in Challenge than in any of the other cities. Easier, you know? Yes, I know. I do not accept your theory, however. Remember, Talarian, Garce and I considered this problem, too, when you left us shamed and deserted at the Death Square. Challenge was the most obvious choice, and therefore the least logical, we felt. It seemed more likely that you would go to Muskwall and live off what fish you could take, or that Gwen would forage for you both in the wild she knew so well. Garce even suggested that you might simply have hidden the air car and remained in some other section of Lartain itself, so you could laugh at us while we searched the planet for you. Dirk fidgeted. Yes, well, I suppose our choice was stupid. No, Talarian, I did not say that. The only stupid choice, I think, would have been to flee to the city in the Starless Pool, where the Braiths were known to be thick. Challenge was a subtle choice, whether you intended it to be that or not. It seemed such a wrong choice that it was actually a right one. Do you understand? I cannot see how the Braiths discovered you by any process of deduction. Maybe, Dirk said. He thought a bit. I remember the first we knew of it was when Bretan spoke to us. He wasn't testing a theory either. He knew we were there, somewhere. Yet you have no idea how. No, no idea. We shall have to live with the fear that they can find us here, then. Otherwise, unless the Braiths can repeat their miracle, we are secure. Understand, though, that our position is not without difficulties. We have shelter and unlimited water, but no food to speak of. Our ultimate exit... We must go to the spaceport and leave Warlorn as soon as possible, I have concluded. Our ultimate exit is going to be very difficult. The Braiths will anticipate us. We have my laser pistol and 2 hunting lasers that I have found in the air car, plus the vehicle itself, armed and well armored, probably belonging to Rosif High Braith Kelsek. One of the derelicts in the airlot is still marginally functional, Dirk interjected. Then we have 2 air cars should we need them, Vickery said. Against us, at least 8 of the Braith hunters still live, and probably 9. I'm not sure how seriously I wounded Lorimar Arkello. It is possible that I killed him, though I am inclined to doubt it. The Braiths can probably put 8 air cars in the sky at once if they chose to, although it is more traditional to fly together, Tain and Tain. Every car will be armored. They have supplies, power, food. They outnumber us. Possibly, since I am an outbond jewel-breaker, they will prevail upon Kirak Redsteel Kavis and the 2 hunters from the Shannagate holding to join them in running me down. Finally, there is Garce Janasek. Garce? I hope, I pray, that he will cut the glowstones from his arm and return to High Cavalan. He will be shamed, alone, wearing dead iron. No easy fate, Talarian. I have disgraced him and Ironjade. I am sorry for his pain, yet this is how I hope it will be. For there is another possibility, you see. Another? He may hunt for us. He cannot leave Warlorn until a ship comes. That will be some time. I do not know what he will do. Surely he won't join the Braiths. There is enemies, and you are his Tain, and Gwen his Crowbethane. He might want to kill me, I don't doubt it, but Garce is more a Cavalar than me, Talarian. He always has been. And now, more than ever, since I am no Cavalar at all after the thing I have done. The old customs require a man's tain, no less than any other, to bring death to a jewel-breaker. It is a custom that only the very strong can follow. The bond of iron and fire is too close for most, so they are left alone to mourn. Yet Gas Janicek is a very strong man, stronger than myself in so many ways. I do not know. I do not know. And if he does come after us? Vickery spoke calmly. I will not raise a weapon against Gas. He is my tain, whether I am his or no, and I have hurt him badly enough already, failed him, shamed him. He has worn a painful scar through most of his adult life because of me. Once, when we were both younger, an older man took offense at one of his jokes and issued challenge. The mode was single shot, and we fought tamed, and in my less-than-infinite wisdom, I convinced Gas that our honor would be served if we fired into the air. We did, to our regret. The others decided to teach Gas a lesson about humor. To my shame, I was left untouched while he was disfigured for my folly. Yet he never approached me. The first time I was with him after the duel, when he was still recovering from his wounds, he said to me, "You were right, Jantony. They did aim for empty air. A pity they missed." Vickery laughed, but Dirk looked at him and saw that his eyes were full of tears, his mouth set grimly. He did not cry, though, as if by some immense effort of will he kept the tears from falling. Abruptly Jan turned and walked back inside, leaving Dirk alone on the balcony with the wind and the white twilight city and the music of Lamia Baylis. Off in the far distance the straining white hands rose, holding back the encroaching wilderness. Dirk studied them, thoughtful, reflecting on Vickery's words. Minutes later the Kavalar returned, dry-eyed and blank-faced. "I am sorry," he began. "No need to. We must get to the crux, Dalaran. Whether Gas hunts us or not, we face formidable odds. We have weapons, should we have to fight, but no one to use them. Gwen is a good marksman, and fearless enough, but she is injured and unsteady. And you, can I trust you? I put it to you bluntly. I trusted you once, and you betrayed me." "How can I answer that question?" Dirk said. "You don't have to believe any promise I give you. But the Braiths want to kill me too, remember? And Gwen as well. Or do you think I betray her as easily as I—" He stopped, in horror of his own words. "As easily as you did me," Vickery finished for him with a hard smile. "You are blunt enough. No, Talarian, I do not think you would betray Gwen. Yet I did not think you would desert us either when we had named you Kef and you had taken the name. We would not have dueled except for you." Dirk nodded. "I know that. Maybe I made a mistake, I don't know. I would have died, though, if I'd kept faith with you." "Died a Keth of Arnjade, with honor," Dirk smiled. "Gwen appealed to me more than death. That much I expect you to understand." "I do. She is still between us, ultimately. Face that, and know it for a truth. Sooner or later, she will choose." "She did choose, Jan. When she left with me, you should face that." Dirk said it quickly, stubbornly. He wondered how much he believed it. "She did not remove the jade and silver," Vickery answered. He gestured impatiently. "This is no matter. I will trust you, for now." "Good. What do you want me to do?" "Someone must fly to Lartain," Dirk frowned. "Why are you always trying to talk me into suicide, Jan?"
"I did not say that you must make the flight, Talarian," Vickery said. "I will do that myself. It will be dangerous, yes, but it must be done."
"Why?" "The Kimdisi, Ruark." Dirk had almost forgotten about his erstwhile host and co-conspirator. Vickery nodded. "He has been a friend to Gwen since our days on Avalon. Though he has never liked me, nor I him, I cannot abandon him entirely. The Braiths, I understand. But how will you get to him?"
"Should I reach Lartain safely, I can summon him by viewscreen. That is my hope, at least." He gave a vaguely fatalistic shrug.
"And me?"
"Remain here with Gwen. Nurse her, guard her. I will leave you one of Rosif's laser rifles. If she recovers sufficiently, let Gwen use it.
She is probably more skillful than you. Agreed?
Agreed. Doesn't sound very difficult.
No, said Vickery. I expect that you will remain safely hidden, that I will return with the Kimdisi and find you as I leave you. Should it become necessary for you to flee, you will have this other air car close at hand. There is a cave nearby that Gwen knows of. She can show you the way. Go to that cave if you must leave Crine Lamia.
What if you don't come back? That is a possibility, you know.
In that case, you will be on your own again, as you were when you first fled Lartain. You had plans then. Follow them, if you can. He smiled a humorless smile. I expect to return, however. Remember that, Talarian. Remember that. There was an undertone of edged iron in Vickery's voice, an echo that called back another conversation in the same chill wind. With startling clarity, Jan's old words came back to Dirk. But I do exist. Remember that. This is not Avalon now, Talarian, and today is not yesterday. It is a dying festival world, a world without a code, so each of us must cling tightly to whatever codes we bring with us. But Jan Vickery, Dirk thought wildly, had brought two codes with him when he came to Warlorn. While Dirk himself had brought none at all, had brought nothing but his love for Gwen Del Varno. Gwen was still sleeping when the two men went from the balcony. Leaving her undisturbed, they walked together to the airlot. Vickery had unpacked the Braith air car thoroughly. Rosif and his Tain had obviously been planning a short, hunting sojourn in the wild before everything had broken loose. Dirk thought it unfortunate that they had not intended a longer trip. As it was, Vickery had found only 4 hard protein bars in the way of food, plus 2 hunting blazers and some clothing that had been slung over the seats. Dirk ate one of the bars immediately. He was famished, and slid the other 3 into the pocket of the heavy jacket he chose. It hung slightly loose on him, but the fit wasn't too bad. Rosif's Tain had approximated Dirk in size, and it was warm, thick leather dyed a deep purple with a collar, cuffs, and a lining of soiled white fur. Both sleeves of the jacket were painted in intricate swirling patterns. The right was red and black, the left silver and green. A smaller matching jacket was also found, Rosif's no doubt, and Dirk appropriated that one for Gwen. Vickery took out the 2 laser rifles, long tubes of jet-black plastic with snarling wolves embossed upon the stocks in white. The first he strapped around his own shoulders, the second he gave to Dirk, along with curt instructions on its operation. The weapon was very light and slightly oily to the touch. Dirk held it awkwardly in one hand. The farewells were brief and overly formal. Then Vickery sealed himself into the big Braith air car, lifted it from the floor, and shot forward into empty air. Dust rose in great clouds at his departure, and Dirk retreated from the backwash choking, with one hand over his mouth and the other on the rifle. When he returned to the suite, Gwen was just stirring. "Jan," she said, raising her head from the leather mattress to see who had just entered. She groaned and lay back again quickly and began to massage her temples with both hands. "My head," she said in a whimpering whisper. Dirk stood the laser up against the wall just inside the door and sat by the side of the sunken bed. "Jan just left," he said. "He's flying back to Lartain to get Ruark." Gwen's only reply was another groan. "Can I get you anything?" Dirk asked. "Water? Food? We've got a couple of these." He took the protein bars out of the pocket of his jacket and handed them down for her inspection. Gwen gave them a brief glance and grimaced in disgust. "No," she said. "Get them away. I'm not that hungry." "You should eat something." "Did," she said. "Last night, Jan crushed up a couple of those bars in water, made a sort of paste." She lowered her hands from her temples and turned on her side to face him. "I didn't keep it down very well," she said. "I don't feel so good." "I gathered that," Dirk said. "You can't expect to feel well after what happened. You've probably got a concussion, and you're lucky you're not dead." "Jan told me," she said, a little sharply. "About afterwards, too, what he did to Myrick." She frowned. "I thought I hit him pretty good when we fell. You saw, didn't you? It felt like I broke his jaw, either that or my fingers, but he didn't even notice.
No, said Dirk. Tell me about, you know, about afterwards. Jan just sort of sketched it out. I want to know.
Her voice was weary and full of pain, but not to be denied. So Dirk told her.
He pointed his gun at Gus, she said at one point. Dirk nodded, and she subsided again.
When he had finished, Gwen was very silent. Her eyes closed briefly, opened again, then closed and did not reopen. She lay quietly on her side, curled up into a sort of fetal ball, her hands clenched into small fists beneath her chin. Watching her, Dirk felt his eyes drawn to her left forearm, to the cold reminder of the jade and silver she still wore.
Gwen, he said softly. Her eyes opened again for a short time, and she shook her head violently, a silent shouted no.
Hey, he said, but by then her lids were shut tight once more, and she was lost within herself, and Dirk was alone with her jewelry and his fears. The room was soaked in sunlight, or what passed for sunlight here on Warlorn. The sunset tones of high noon were slanting through the window, and dust motes drifted lazily through the broad beam. The light fell so that only one side of the mattress was illuminated. Gwen lay half in and half out of shadow. Dirk, he did not speak again to Gwen or look at her, found himself watching the patterns the light made on the floor. In the center of the chamber, everything was warm and red, and it was here the dust danced, drifting in from the darkness and turning briefly crimson, briefly golden, throwing tiny shadows until it drifted out of the light again and was gone. He raised his hand, held it out for minutes, hours, for a time. It grew warm and warmer. Dust swirled around it. Shadows fell away like water when he twitched and turned his fingers. The sun was friendly and familiar. But suddenly he became aware that the movement of his hand, like the endless whirling of dust, had no purpose, no pattern, and no meaning. It was the music that told him so, the music of Lamia Baylis. He pulled his hand in and frowned. Around the great center of light and life was a thin twisting border where the sun shone through the window's rim of black and blood-stained glass, or fought through. It was only a small border, but it sealed the land of the stirring dust on every side. Beyond it were the black corners, the sections of the room that the hub and the Trojan suns never reached, where fat demons and the shapes of Dirk's fears hunched obscurely, forever safe from scrutiny. Smiling and rubbing his chin, stubble covered his cheeks and jaw, and he was starting to itch. Dirk studied those corners and let the Dark Dawn music back into his soul. How he had ever tuned it out, he was not sure, but now it was back and all around him. The tower they were in, their home, sounded its long, low note. Years away, or centuries, a chorus answered in ringing widow's wails. He heard shuddering throbs and the screams of abandoned babies and the slippery, sliding sound of knives slicing warm flesh and the drum. How could the wind beat a drum, he thought. He didn't know. Perhaps it was something else, but it sounded like a drum. So terribly far off, though, and so alone. So horribly, endlessly alone. The mists and the shadows gathered in the farthest, dimmest corner of their room, and then began to clear. Dirk saw a table and a low chair, growing from the walls and floor like strange plastic vegetables. He wondered briefly what he was seeing them by. The sun had moved a little, and only a thin beam of light was trickling through the window now, and finally that snapped off too, and the world was grey. When the world was grey, he noted, the dust did not dance. No, not at all. He felt the air, to be sure. There was no dust, no warmth, no sunlight. He nodded sagely. It seemed that he had discovered some great truth. Dim lights were stirring in the walls, ghosts waking for another night, phantoms and husks of old dreams. All of them were grey and white. Colour was only for the living and had no place here. The ghosts began to move. They were locked into the walls, each of them. From time to time, Dirk thought he could see one stop its furious dancing and beat helplessly and hopelessly against the glass walls that kept it from the room. Wraith hands pounding, pounding, yet the room shook not at all. Stillness was a part of these things. The phantoms were just that, all insubstantial, and pound though they might, finally they must return to dancing. The dance macabre, shapeless shadows. Oh, but it was beautiful, moving, dipping, writhing, walls of grey flame. So much better than the dust motes, these dancers, they had a pattern, and their music was the song of the siren city. Desolation, emptiness, decay, a single drum, beaten slow, alone, alone, alone. Nothing has meaning. Dirk! It was Gwen's voice. He shook his head, looked away from the walls down to where she lay in the darkness. It was night, night. Somehow the day had gone. Gwen, she had not been sleeping, was looking up at him. I'm sorry, she said. She was telling him something, but he knew it already, knew it from her silence, knew it from the drum, perhaps, from crying Lamia. He smiled. You never forgot, did you? It wasn't a question of forgetting. There was a reason why you never removed her. He pointed. Yes, she said. She sat up in the bed, the coverlet falling around her waist. Jan had unsealed the front of her suit so it hung on her loosely, and the soft curves of her breasts were visible. In the flickering light, the flesh was pale and grey. Dirk felt no stirrings. Her hand went to the jade and silver. She touched it, stroked it, sighed. I never thought, I don't know. I said what I had to say, Dirk. Breton Braith would have killed you. Maybe that would have been better, he answered. Not bitterly, but in a bemused, faintly distracted sort of way. So you never meant to leave him? I don't know. How do I know what I meant? I was going to try, Dirk, really I was. I never really believed, though. I told you that, I was honest. This isn't Avalon, and we've changed. I'm not your Jenny. I never was, and now less than ever. Yes, he said, nodding. I remember you driving. The way you gripped the stick, your face, your eyes. You have jade eyes, Gwen. Jade eyes and a silver smile. You frighten me. He glanced away from her, back to the walls. Light murals moved in chaotic patterns along with the thin, wild music. Somehow the ghosts had gone away. He had only taken his eyes from them for an instant, yet all of them had melted and left. Like his old dreams, he thought. Jade eyes? Gwen was saying. Like Garth's. Garth has blue eyes, she said. Still, like Garth's. She chuckled and groaned. It hurts when I laugh, she said. But it's funny. Me, like Garth. No wonder, Jan. You'll go back to him? Maybe. I'm not sure. It would be very hard to leave him now. Do you understand? He's finally chosen. When he pointed his laser at Garth, after that, after he turned against Tain and Holdfast and World, I can't just, you know... But I won't go back to being a Bethane to him, not ever. It will have to be more than jade and silver. Dirk felt empty. He shrugged. And me? You know it wasn't working, surely. You had to feel it. You never stopped calling me Jenny. He smiled. I didn't. Maybe not. Maybe not. Never, she said. She rubbed her head. I'm feeling a little better now, she said. You still have those protein bars? Dirk took one from his pocket and flipped it at her. She snatched it from the air with her left hand, smiled at him, unwrapped it, and began to eat. He stood up abruptly, jamming his hands deep into his jacket pockets and walked to the high window. The tops of the bone-white towers still wore a faint, waning, reddish tinge. Perhaps the Helai and its attendants were not entirely gone from the western sky. But below, in the streets, the dark dawn city drank of night. The canals were black ribbons, and the landscape dripped with the dim purple radiance of phosphorescent moss. Through the lambent gloom, Dirk glimpsed his solitary bargeman, as he had glimpsed him once before upon those same dark waters. He was leaning on his pole, as ever, letting the current take him, coming on and on, easily, inexorably. Dirk smiled. "Welcome," he muttered. "Welcome." "Dirk?" Gwen had finished eating. She was fastening her jumpsuit tight again, framed in the murky light. Behind her, the walls were alive with grey-white dancers. Dirk heard drums and whispers and promises, and he knew the last were lies. "One question, Gwen," he said heavily. She stared at him. "Why did you call me back?" he said. "Why, if you thought we were so dead, you and me, why couldn't you leave me alone?" Her face was pale and blank. "Call you back?" "You know," he said, "the Whisper Jewel." "Yes," she said uncertainly. "It's back in Lartain." "Of course it is," he said. "In my luggage, you sent it to me." "No," she said. "No. You met me. You lasered us from your ship. I never, believe me, that was the first I knew that you were coming. I didn't know what to think of it. I thought you'd get around to telling me, though, so I never pressed." Dirk said something, but the tower moaned its low note and took his words away from him. He shook his head. "You didn't call me?" "No. But I got the Whisper Jewel on Brack, the same one Esper etched. You can't fake that." He remembered something else. "And Arkin said..." "Yes," she said. She bit her lip. "I don't understand. He must have sent it. But he was my friend. I had to have someone to talk to." "I don't understand," she whimpered. "Your head?" Dirk asked quickly. "No," she said. "No." He watched her face. "Arkin sent it." "Yes, he was the only one. It had to be. We met on Avalon right after you and I, you know. Arkin helped me. It was a bad time. He was there when you sent your jewel to Jenny. I was crying and all. I told him about it, and we talked. Even later, after I met Jan, Arkin and I stayed close. He was like a brother." "A brother," Dirk repeated. "Why would..." "I don't know." Dirk was thoughtful. "When you met me at the spaceport, Arkin was with you. Did you ask him to come along? I was counting on you being alone, I remember." "It was his idea," she said. "Well, I told him I was nervous about seeing you again. He offered to come along and lend me moral support. And he said he wanted to meet you too, you know, after all I had told him on Avalon. And the day you and he took off into the wild, you know, when I got into trouble with Garce and Bretan, what went on? Arkin said, an armor bug migration. It wasn't, actually, but we had to check. We rushed away. Why didn't you tell me where you were going? I thought that Jan and Garce had beaten you up, that they were keeping you away from me. The night before, you'd said, I know. But Arkin said he'd tell you." "And he convinced me to run away," Dirk said. "And you. I suppose he told you that to convince me you should..." She nodded. He turned toward the window. The last light was gone from the tower tops. Above, a handful of stars sparkled. Dirk counted them, 12, an even dozen. He wondered if some of them were really galaxies away across the great black sea. "Gwen," he said, "Jan left this morning, from here to Lartain and back by air car. How long should that take?" When she did not answer, he turned to look at her again. The walls were full of phantoms, and Gwen trembled in their light. "He should be back by now, shouldn't he?" She nodded and lay back again on the pale mattress. The siren city sang its lullaby, its hymn to final sleep.